And at the end of the day, all it is just a relational database. Relational database that looks pretty, but it's a relational database with some core functionality built in.
Welcome to another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials, where we help you accelerate your career and turn soft skills into hard money.
Welcome to another edition of Salesforce Trails and Trials. Delighted today to feature U.S. Air Force veteran and Salesforce veteran, Andrew Day. Welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Now, we love sharing stories because everybody's life takes a meandering path. And I think some people, I know I did, we doubt sometimes on how these very unique experiences are going to help me and whether I should invest my time, really give my best effort. And so excited to talk about your journey. As you've mentioned, it's quite unique, and very much we appreciate your service, and look forward to learning a little bit more about that. But I always like to start back from the beginning and talk a little bit about when did you recognize that something in tech was interesting, right? That you had a knack for that. Take us back.
So I was in high school, and that was back when you used to do HTML using essentially tables to build the websites. And so way before divs and everything else.
Yeah,
And so
before CSS.
yep, and just raw code. And so I went ahead and built a website for my school as a senior. And a friend of mine was really interested in cybersecurity. So we both kind of just like built our own PCs and did that kind of thing. Didn't really get to do a whole lot with technology in the military, but that always kind of stuck with me. I grew up around technology. My parents always had computers in the house, so I think it was kind of always ultimately the direction I wanted to go. The hard part is kind of like what you were just alluding to is how do you get started? Where do you get in at?
Yeah, when you first built that computer, that probably that vanilla, white box that many of us learned on, did you go to a computer show and go buy the components like one by one, or did you buy a kit, or did you buy the computer already built?
Online, I went online to a website where you can get the individual pieces, did the research on all that, and that's how we ended up putting it together.
Okay. Nice. And so when you prior to that, did you were you a builder? Right? Were you a big Lego guy? Did you
No.
like no?
Not really. I've always just enjoyed computers. When I was in third grade, it's the first time we ever did a typing test, and I said I was performing at a fifth grade level.
Okay.
And so, like, we grew up playing World of Warcraft again, or not World of Warcraft, but like the old Warcraft games. My brother, my sister, and I would be there on our own computers, on our own network, like playing each other, like in a LAN party, kind of an environment. So
Well, I
we
love that.
We're pretty familiar early on.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you supporting the family business because my cousin Mike Morheim was a co-founder of Blizzard. And so love that. I love that. StarCraft as well is one of my, I preferred StarCraft and Protoss a little bit more than Warcraft, but can definitely appreciate the enjoyment there. And so after you did this, I'm curious, you mentioned that you always had computers at the house. What were your parents also into technology?
More so my dad. He was very curious about them. So he'd buy a bunch of them and I believe swap out parts. I never really got to see all that all too much. I just remember them being everywhere and very few of them plugged in, which is probably similar to the graveyard that I've got going on right now. So I guess
Okay.
there's
Yeah, you're following in your father's footsteps. I love it. And they're just a slightly higher price Legos, right?
but exactly, much higher price.
Oh, that's cool. And so kind of walk me through. So that's elementary school, you mentioned that. And so, right, did you build something? Did you kind of leverage some software, have a project that leveraged some of these tech skills?
I did in high school. So when I was, I believe, a junior in high school, might have been my senior year. I don't remember for sure. I got introduced to an Apple company, Freshland Produce in Washington State. And so that friend of mine, he's actually in cybersecurity now. His name's escaping me now.
You'll remember in a sec.
I remember his first name, Dandy. I can't remember his last name. My memory's been going for the last couple of years now. Anyways, Andy Robbins, that's it. He actually played as my actor, and I did one of those "How Do They Make It" videos with iMac, and I ended up recording it. We got in the supermarket. He did this whole spiel, and we ended up submitting that in for DECA, which was a kind of a marketing pro, high school marketing program.
Okay.
And I'm going to state with it. Never, I didn't win anything at state, but I at least got to state with it. So that
Yeah.
was kind of a cool experience.
Yeah, that's cool. So I at the time, did you find that a lot of your peers were essentially doing the same things? Or did you find that it was pretty unique that you had these kind of affinities and hobbies and interests among the people that you hung out with?
I was actually a big loner in high school. Really, in school altogether, I didn't have the same friend groups year to year. I always kind of just did my own thing. There's a couple of people that I hung on to over the years, but building relationships with people early on in life was really, really difficult for me. Not because of anything wrong with them or really anything wrong with me. I think it was just a socialization issue that I had where I just found it hard to relate to others. So what I did, ended up filling that time with instead, a lot of the time was either playing games, technology, playing with my brother, with that. And then ultimately in high school, started building programmatically, doing websites and trying to learn how all that worked and kind of just turned more towards informal education as opposed to socialization.
No, that's, I appreciate you sharing that. You know, it's a vulnerable thing to do, and I think it's important because many of us have, there's a wide array. Large type number of types of people, and you know, there's an opportunity for everybody. It's just understanding right where the strengths lie, which is very
Well, and
interesting.
I noticed a very big difference after basic training that I was a very different person. That's when I'm the For the first time, I really acknowledged to myself, okay, I didn't have a lot of confidence when I was younger. I didn't have the confidence to go and be outgoing and to make a lot of these friends and to really put myself out there for whatever reason that may be. And so ever since that moment, it's been something that I've personally chosen to really work on. And I'd like to say that it's steered me in the right direction to be able to improve as I get older.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I wonder now that you, as you think about high school, you have this project and then kind of you move into kind of college and maybe some other diverse experiences being college aged. I'm curious that aspect of understanding the relational component, that confidence, that ability to engage with others, complementing the technical portion, because it's a pretty common observation that people make that sometimes like you're either really a technical person or you're like really kind of a relational people person, right?
Right.
And I have both and I love both, but I'm curious on your thoughts as, you know, maybe you saw something open up in front of you, or you found an opportunity, or you saw something that you were able to come in and solve a challenge because you worked on both sides of that.
For me, I think it's more identifying the right path. So, for example, coming from a consulting background, like you said, it takes both sides of that spectrum. You need to have the technical expertise and you need to have those soft skills that are refined. If you would have talked to me 10 years ago, we'd be having a very different conversation just because I was not in the same place, psychologically, physically, emotionally, you know, what all the ranges. I would have just been getting out of the military and still trying to figure out my direction in the world. And so, looking back at that now and seeing the skills I've developed, it helps kind of steer where you want things to go. And so what I mean by that is, for example, lately a lot more of my focus has been cybersecurity. I'm currently studying for CISSP. I've gotten a couple of cybersecurity certifications through CompTIA because of some DoD contracts, or I guess kind of DOW contracts. And I've realized that I like security because it's either right or it's wrong. There's really no gray area there. And so that I work a little bit better with the black and white. And then also when it comes to security, it's not as social as consulting or other kind of soft skills environments. People don't go to the security guy expecting them to be excited to see you. And so with my black and white approach to things, maybe from a personality perspective, that would be a better fit. Who knows? So I'm just kind of letting time dictate and the direction, and we'll kind of see where it goes from there.
That's interesting. Well, I'd love to tap into a little bit. The audience is there's some veterans, I'm sure, in our audience, and we are grateful for all of their service. The majority are not veterans. And I think one thing that you might be able to shed some light on here is I'm a mentor with ACP. And sometimes it's very hard between enlisted and officers. They have quite a different experience and a different set of challenges when it comes to figuring out how to onboard those things and leverage them into the technical world. And I think if we could share a little bit about, for anyone who knows a veteran, having some insight into some of these challenges and how we can help them translate and magnify those strengths. Right, to make recommendations, to bring referrals, to give them opportunities in our own organizations, I think would be really, really beneficial. So I wonder if any of that, you have any insights there based on your experience.
Yes, I think officers and enlisted, there's always this rivalry, right? Kind of like you have the rivalry between services of which one's better, which one's worse. I don't think it's a matter of one being better than the other. I think they have different responsibilities, which means they have different skill sets. A lot of your officers have more of the corporate level management kind of experience running whole organizations, not really experience with people management or what I would call true leadership by example. Consequently, I think they get hired for a lot of your VP, your director level roles right out of the military. They don't, while they do still experience some elements of difficulty with transition, arguably it's not at the same rate as it would be with enlisted, where their skill set transition isn't as clear cut. Just one example, people leadership versus organizational leadership are two very different things. You're dealing with very different people in that process. Being a mid-level leader, like a non-commissioned officer or an NCO, I was given the skill set in order to be able to lead people individually and help motivate, mentor, and help them grow professionally. And at the organizational level for officers, they're more taught how to build up an organization. There's some focus on individual leadership, but it's really more about it's more about the mission, more about the unit. So equivalent to that would be the organization. And so anytime that I see people cross those two paths, like an enlisted veteran going for corporate leadership or an officer going for the more the hands-on doer roles, like consultants, individual contributor kind of roles, sometimes there can be a little bit of difficulty there with the translation because it is just a very different skill set base, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and so it ended all the translation of trying to leverage their prior experience and translate that into means that really look great on a resume, on a portfolio, it can be a challenge. And I think I've certainly dealt with that a little bit of trying to strategize on how with with the gentleman that I'm mentoring. So this is good. I think, I know you've had some experience, and people may have seen kind of in the news around, you were referred to me by another gentleman who has really tried to make an impact in the, kind of vet force or Salesforce military space. And I know you have some experience there. And I think, for, like I said, those of us who are not veterans but want to support veterans in this respect, and those who are veterans, I'd love to get your perspective of kind of your experience, maybe the evolution of that, so that given the fact that data shows right now that demand is roughly one third of supply. Right, it's important that people recognize or figure out, is this something that's a good fit, or should I pivot and add, cybersecurity, add some additional elements to what I'm doing to be more marketable and to be able to translate my skills in a, much more beneficial way.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely, I have to give credit where credit is due. Salesforce gave me opportunities I never would have imagined. The sitting here today, even having this conversation, is not something that was in the plan. This was not in the cards at all. I got out of the military in 2013. I ended up taking a couple of years, couldn't really maintain a job longer than a couple of weeks at a time. Ended up started finally getting some help for things I needed help with post my military service. And it ended up costing me quite a bit. It ended up costing me my marriage at the time. Again, couldn't maintain employment. And I always got the answer from employers, well, it's just not a good fit. Never giving any kind of constructive feedback, more than likely, I would assume, because of
Liability.
the legality behind why they were really doing. It's an assumption. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. I'm sure it'll happen again, but that's just kind of what I've come to terms with. Well, I finally hit my limit in 2019, and I said, I'm done. I'm going to file social security disability. I'm going to retire. Disability benefits plus VA benefits is 5 grand a month. It's not a great life, but it could be a lot worse. So I'll do that. Well, I filed for social security disability, and then about 3 months in, I get a random phone call one day, and it's from a recruiter at a software company about 90 miles away. And they said, hey, we see you have Salesforce experience on your LinkedIn. Do you want to come interview for a job? And I thought, well, I mean, I'm not doing anything tomorrow. Why not? That single decision changed the entire trajectory of my life. The first 12 months at that, I went to the interview and I thought I bombed it. I actually was completely transparent and honest the whole time. Walked in very confident, not because of the job, but because I knew I didn't need it. So, why not? I felt very confident. I didn't make it 15 minutes down the road before they called me with an offer. And so I ended up accepting it. And within that first 12 months, I got four certifications. I got the fifth around month 14, which is when I ended up getting picked up by a recruiting agency for a federal contracting position at the Pentagon for the Office of Secretary of Defense Public Affairs Office. And so I got to do an implementation at the Pentagon, which was pretty cool. Did that for a year. And then while I was there, I had a phone call where from someone I'd worked with in the past saying, hey, we have an implementation that we're doing right now. Can you help us? And I'd love to help, but I'm working full time for the government. So how am I going to handle this? Well, I had a mentee at the time. He was my first mentee in Salesforce space, working with a nonprofit to help them get certified. And he had been trying for about 3 months after getting his certification to get the attention of the recruiters, and they wouldn't give him time of day because he doesn't have the hands-on experience. Well, to get the hands-on experience, you need that entry-level job, ergo that circular argument that persists in today's technology culture. So I asked him, well, do you want to come just work with me for a bit? I'll pay you. Like, I'm sure you'd probably do it for free, but I value what he brings to the table being a veteran. Paid him $35 an hour, if I remember correctly, to start, upgraded him after that to about 40 or 45, which is about 60 to 75,000 a year if it was full time. So seemed fair for a first role. And it's almost double what I made in my first role. So why not? So I bring him on, and about 30 days in, he schedules a call with me, and he says, I feel really bad, but I got a job offer and I need to take this for my family, but I don't want to let you down. And I celebrated with him. I helped him negotiate his salary and benefits, and he moved on to that role. And I couldn't have been more excited and more proud of him for that, because that was the whole point. He did it. He broke in. That's when the light bulb went off to me that this is the bridge to the gap. And so I ended up starting my own business, 22 Nexus, a Salesforce partner consultancy. And as I would get projects, I would hire other military veterans and military spouses with their certification that need the hands-on experience to move on to full-time roles. The thought being, I can't necessarily give them the job full-time. But I can at least get them the experience to get a step towards that job. And well, not everybody has made it onto a full-time job just because of the market and co obviously COVID and a lot of other things. I'm proud to say that in the 4 years that it's existed, I've helped eight veterans and military spouses break into the field with an average starting salary of $87,000 a year. The highest being 110 plus additional benefits
Nice.
for their first role. And the reason that I do that, it's not my day job now. I'm actually a Salesforce technical architect and security consultant for Stealth. It's a federal contracting company that works mostly with the DoD and some other agencies. And when I interviewed for that job, the owner told me, no matter what happens with this conversation, whether you join us or not, I want to be part of what you're doing. I want to be part of this mission and help veterans succeed. And that hit me because most of the time in this ecosystem, we hear a lot of the virtue signaling. We hear a lot of the we support veterans, but then when you say, oh, how, they don't have an answer. That's why it's been so important for me to use 22 Nexus to actually be a function of change and to do the work, not just say the words. If anything, I'm really bad about saying the words because I don't want to sound like everyone else. I would rather the work speak for itself, but obviously, if you don't talk about it, the work isn't going to get noticed. So it's kind of a catch 22. But you asked to start, as I probably went off on an entire tangent, what people can do to support veterans, you can do it. It's that simple. That military veterans, while we're not all the same person, and hiring a veteran is not going to guarantee success, it does guarantee a couple of things: that they know how to be where they're supposed to be when it's time to be there, that they have integrity, that they're going to do the best they can in order to accomplish what needs to be done, and that they're trainable. And those four things are the things I feel like in today's society we're really missing the most at a fundamental level. And that level of consistency isn't something you find in any other kind of subculture, race, gender, et cetera. It's all because we were all trained and programmed to operate and work this way. And that's ultimately why I've started my business. And if I could work it full time, that would be incredible. But I've used it for this purpose because I got a random phone call one day because I did some trailheads to put it on my LinkedIn. Now, it could be argued I created that opportunity because I put in the work, maybe, but sometimes it's also you just got a lucky phone call. So if you don't do this training and you don't do the education, nothing is probably going to happen. But by doing them, you're opening up opportunities for yourself that may come, may still not. But they may open up other doors. So, like for example, when you're talking about when we were referred to talk to one another before this podcast, we talked about how we probably never would have crossed paths if it hadn't been for that referral. Well, if I hadn't have done a trailhead back in 2012, this conversation wouldn't be happening. And so, I mean, I don't want to sit here and get into philosophy butterfly effect, but one thing does directly impact another, and so just like how as veterans we can work towards our education and work towards what we want to accomplish, the other side, the hiring managers, can do the same thing if they choose to, but they're going to have to ultimately choose to want to understand our demographic and our culture and why we operate the way we do if they're going to be able to benefit from what it is we're able to provide.
For sure. I mean, I want to call out a couple of things that you mentioned there, and I think it's a great model. And I mentioned I have an academy as well that I kind of walk people through same idea, because it's always easier to get a job when you have a job. And if you can just provide something small with a little bit of mentoring, they can put that they have a job, right? And they now it's a total they're perceived in a totally different light when they're, getting recruited or they're out kind of considering other options. It's really a it's a beautiful way of almost allowing someone to move into your professional house. Like you're providing a room in your professional house that they can stay. And now the perception of them living in that professional house is a totally different perspective.
I
And
had
I
a
also
client in particular that did a, they were trying to hire for a Salesforce admin, and they reached out to me to do it. And I said, well, actually, I'm moved on to more consulting roles, but are you a veteran-friendly organization? And they're like, actually, yeah, we're founded by a veteran. I said, I've got an idea. Are you open to some creative problem solving? And they said, sure. What we ended up doing is I ended up getting them a Salesforce admin, military veteran, who's and a military spouse both. She was certified, needed the hands-on experience. They did a contract to hire with me supervising her work as a consultancy. They ended up hiring her full time, and she's still there today.
That's beautiful. Yeah, what a
And
great way.
that's why I say if people want to hire veterans, then do it. It's that simple. There's so many creative ways that we can make that happen and get it done. You just have to want to do it.
For sure. And I think I want to call out a few things, right? One, you mentioned that phone call, right? Of someone giving you a ring. Well, you had to pay the phone bill, so the phone would ring. You had to answer the phone, and you had to be willing to say yes to something that's a little unexpected. And I had in my life as well. I mean, I worked at the American Film Institute years ago. And it was a big jump from what I was doing at the time. And it was a multi-platform scenario. They were Mac, PC, and Linux and Unix. And I was just like, and it was kind of a drive. And I don't know. But I said yes. And it was absolutely transformative in my career. I worked there for 5 years. They then had me go home and work remotely. And that's where I founded my first business. And then they became one of my first customers to my new business. And it was just amazing how it worked out. It's just incredible. And so I think that's a really good thing. The second aspect I want to call out is this element of people willing to give the effort in thinking. On a prior episode, and by the way, it was Matt Pieper who introduced us. And so thank you, Matt. But on a prior episode, not only is Matt's interview, but also we talk about the top 10 in-demand skills according to the World Economic Forum. And the number one skill on that list is analytical thinking. And what you just highlighted here was the combination of analytical thinking with, I would call it kind of an appetite for effort. It's like when we think about, we have to give someone the willingness to be like, okay, I'm willing to stop what I'm doing, think about your situation, and be willing to think outside the box, to give a little extra effort, maybe to leverage some of our influence, a little bit of our persuasion, a little bit of like, how would I get this framed up so that other people up the flagpole need to approve this? How could we make it happen? And there's an aspect of that that I think that not to be, too sappy, but I think there's an element of like genuine love and care and gratitude that are exhibited through those things that we really need a lot more of. Especially given your point of saying, listen, one thing we know about people coming out of the military is that they are well endowed in these four areas. And if you can tap into that, the momentum of those areas, man, the success can be tremendous. But it's going to take a little bit of effort, appetite, and you kind of operationalizing your gratitude. Because I mean, who wouldn't say that we're grateful for all of our veterans for protecting our liberties? Well, the way that we can actually turn that into action is we take that gratitude and we put it into analytical thinking and problem solving and willingness to listen and think creatively about how can that be done? There is a way, to quote Ronald Reagan, right? And I just love that perspective and the way that you have taken it in a micro capacity. And I think this is really important too. That so often we think about the macro level, right? Like the big stories and the big prominence, all of this. But I think actually real goodness is done in the micro. What is my small sphere of influence? How many people can I help? As you mentioned, there's eight people whose lives, families, downstream, retirement, children, generations are going to be transformed just from those 8 people. And I think about, you know, roughly the 16 who have gone through my program. Their lives are absolutely transformed. And if each of us found our own spot of how to do that and tried to loop in some veterans in the process, man, what a great future that bodes for us.
I agree 100%. And it's one of the reasons I probably over the last 6 months or so been a little bit more critical of different veteran programs and different veteran organizations, because they're saying a lot of the right things, but they're not really contributing to the solution. Not in the way that they're promising it. And so while good work is still being done, the things that are being promised aren't being delivered, but there's zero accountability for that and zero acknowledgement even of that. And it's almost like trying to move the goalposts to say that they don't come out and say that that promise was never made, but it ends up coming across, at least to me, that that's the interpretation. And I'm one of those, one of my favorite analogies that I like to use is on Veterans Day, we end up getting offered, you know, different meals and things like that. One of them is at Applebee's. It's like for a free 6 ounce steak and 2 sides and a drink. They don't even have a 6 ounce steak on the menu. And so it's, to me, I always kind of think, are you really appreciative, or do you just want credit for being appreciative, mm-hmm. but not even meet the minimum standard for what one of your customers will be able to purchase? Like, it seems like a halfway attempt to get some good PR, but maybe isn't really heartfelt, if that makes sense.
Sure. Well, we have to think about, is it better to feel good or to do good?
Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, that's really important. I mean, I, you know, my mentor, he's in a tough spot. And I think you're when I say my mentor, the mentee, I guess is the term, right? The gentleman that I'm trying to mentor he's in a tough spot, and he's dealing a lot with what you mentioned, right? So you got responses that they said, you know, I don't know if it's a good fit, but they got feedback that, he got one person who responded back to him. The other 30 just ghosted him.
Yep.
And never got anything. And part of that is because, you know, you put your job on LinkedIn and you're going to get like 2,000 responses mm-hmm. in a week.
Yep.
And sometimes more. And it's very difficult for hiring managers and others to be like, how do I deal with that kind of volume for people who are looking for positions? Because people are, you know, they're willing to be underemployed and do whatever, like just to find something that's in the direction they want to go.
And it's gotten even worse because the thousands of people have been laid off. Those jobs haven't resurfaced.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't come back since all those, I want to say over the last 2 years, 2 or 3 years, when those layoffs at Salesforce started, it had a chain effect, and partners are still downstream of that, suffering from the consequences,
mm-hmm.
Which has led to people lying about their qualifications in order to get those jobs, mm-hmm. just to get the interview,
mm-hmm.
even though they don't have the credentials or the experience that they say they do. If they do end up getting hired, and it's, for example, for a partner or consultancy, that's a black eye on the partner now, mm-hmm. with the relationship with the customer. And it just, there's so many compounding things that have resulted because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I, like you said, with the current state of the ecosystem, the only area where there is a need that's higher than the demand is in architects. So those that are at my level or higher, where we're way more advanced in the ecosystem with a lot more time in there, that's where all the opportunities are, because that's the level of professionals that these companies want now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would assume, because of the oversaturation, having the different consulting certifications and experience is kind of the norm, if you think about it, by looking across of the availability of resources. And so even if they don't really need an architect, to them, having an architect sounds a whole lot better. Mm. And so that's what ends up getting offered.
Interesting. I want to chat about your you're kind of adding on cybersecurity to
Mm-hmm.
your portfolio, because I have certainly seen, and it certainly helped in my world. I mean, my journey of coming up through similar, right? I had a Timex Sinclair 1000 when I was 12. That was when I did my first programming and, programming a little game. And I always wanted a Commodore 64. I'm aging myself a little bit here. But as I went up and, founded my first, after being a paper boy, of course, but had my first startup in 1998. And it was a software company. And of course, you just learn what you need to learn. And this was a content management system before there was WordPress. And part of that, I had to learn not only the programming languages that I'm learning, but I had to learn about how to do image manipulation in Java, and then basically how to set up full stack stuff on top of, FreeBSD and Linux boxes. And I had to learn about security and handshakes and hard drives and, all this stuff with the web and web services. All of those dimensions, they may not seem related to what I've done in the Salesforce world in the last 24 years, but they absolutely come into play all the time, every day. All of those kind of meandering paths and the things that I learned along the way, they're just more tools on my belt, and enables me to come up with very creative ways to solve problems and to think about, well, there's not a direct solution, but if we go through this, on the other side of that is a path forward. And I'm curious as to areas that you've seen, maybe in addition to cybersecurity, that would be really good for both veterans and others who are looking to differentiate themselves in this marketplace. Any ideas that you have?
Yeah, absolutely. So the I didn't even know about Salesforce until my second job out of the military in 2013, no, 2014. And I was sitting there at a training. I was in a room full of other peers. I was supposed to be a military liaison for a mental health company. And my goal was to basically be like a pharmaceutical rep, where I would travel and try to get the military bases, being a veteran, to send their patients to our hospital. Well, they use Salesforce, and it was still back at Classic at that time. Well, I remember sitting there, and this guy was standing up there that I couldn't really understand. And he was teaching us all how to use Salesforce. So he was the admin. And I remember thinking, I could be doing his job right now and be way more effective. That's where I actually started learning about Trailhead, but it's because of that experience. I realized that Salesforce had its own programming language, Apex. And in 2014, after that job didn't end up working out, just that one in particular, I called them and I told, just to give you insight into the kind of stuff that we deal with in the employment world. I was in Phoenix, Arizona, and I called them saying, "Hey, I've been traveling like 80% of the time. I'm not able to make my doctor's appointments. I can't even pick up my prescriptions. Like, I agreed to 45% travel. I really need to return to that so that I can make my doctor's appointments and,
Sure,
do the things I
have a
need to
life.
do after getting out of the military." The next day, I didn't have a job.
Wow.
And the response was because it's not a good fit. That's just one of dozens that I know I've personally experienced. And it was very, very disheartening to know that you could be that disposable, but that disposable for a reason that's supposed to be protected by law. So I ended up walking away from that, though, doing some Salesforce stuff, trying to take a negative, turn it into a positive. And I did some training on it, learned about the objects, basic stuff, but then I kind of fell off and started doing web development. So I started building my own websites, learned about divs and other things, and I started doing a lot more HTML and CSS. Well, I found a local web developer that agreed to take me on as an apprentice. And so I actually did work with him to get the real world experience as an intern. Fast forward to 2016, I'm there working part-time for him now as an employee doing web development. And I start doing more Salesforce training, realizing, hey, there's this thing called Visualforce, and it's just HTML with like some extra stuff. So I started learning about Salesforce again. Ultimately, all of that is the experience that they picked up on later in 2019 when I got that phone call. It's just because I had documented all that on LinkedIn. There's certain skills in Salesforce that are very beneficial but are very underappreciated. One of those is HTML, CSS, and JavaScript because of Experience Cloud. The fact you can build your own website on Salesforce for free, public facing, and you don't need to pay for any licenses for people to have to log in to use it. Now, I wouldn't suggest trying to put your own authentication on there and bypass their master services agreement, but you can, within the confines of your agreement, build a public-facing website. A lot of people have done that. I know David Nava, in particular, I believe, did that at one point when he was really moving up the ranks before he started working at Salesforce. He built his own portfolio on an Experience Cloud site on a dev org. Those kinds of languages for development in particular really come in handy, and it really shows that you actually know how to code object-oriented programming with the JavaScript, which comes in very handy when you're going to start doing some custom things with Experience Cloud, which is a very, very common use case in public sector. Public sector in particular, not everybody can work public sector. If you have a criminal history, there's a good chance you can't get a job there. I don't know what the statistics are with veterans and criminal histories, but I would like to think that if they held a security clearance once, that they'd be eligible to get one again. Obviously, post-military service, not everybody has the same journey, and some people struggle with addiction, alcoholism, other things to where maybe that may not be an option. But if that's not the case, that's an asset to a company, to where you're hirable, and honing back on those four core things that a veteran can provide to an organization, a lot of the time they'd be willing to put you through a boot camp. I know my Pentagon job, I didn't have Security Plus, but it was required for the contract. And so I went through a boot camp that they paid for, and I got it first try.
Yep, nice.
Another contract required cybersecurity specialist. I did my own education that time, got it first try. So there's a lot of certifications that you can get to make yourself more marketable that aren't just in the Salesforce space that also apply to Salesforce. Salesforce is a SaaS-based organization. So all of your cloud SaaS-based controls, all of your cloud plus concepts apply here. This is a vendor with a singular product doing the same thing. And at the end of the day, all it is just a relational database. Relational database that looks pretty, but it's a relational database with some core functionality built in. And so once you kind of peel back the layers of what Salesforce is and compare it to other spaces like Google Cloud, AWS, even other softwares like ServiceNow that are built similarly, it all starts to kind of bleed together, and then you start to really see where the diversification can come into play and how you can market yourself to different audiences. But I would agree with you that the era of buying in on a singular software to make a living on is showing to no longer be sufficient into the ecosystem, especially with the supply demand issue that we're seeing currently.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's a really good point. I mean, you talk about Experience Cloud. There's also your everyday sites page, and which uses a subset of that, and then just Lightning Web Components. There's a lot there, and now I wouldn't advocate people go and use something like Cline inside VS Code or Agentforce Vibes. You may have heard of that as a kind of coding assistant. One of the things I would recommend people do is, first of all, Salesforce is providing this free of charge for any Salesforce customer. I haven't tried it if I only had a dev org, but I suspect there's going to be a fair number of requests that will be free for people. And I think it brings out a couple things. One, I love using it. I have a project right now where, it's basically a big org assessment. And so I've downloaded all of the metadata. I have assessments from Hubble and Elements Cloud, and I have my own security and well-architected framework assessment that I've built. And all that becomes source data. And now a great use of AI. I don't think every use of AI is great, but one great use of AI is this summarizing and kind of dot connecting, which is great. So this organization had no business processes documented. So now by interrogating the metadata, I can find connected components that are stitched across various tools, like an object and then a flow trigger and then an Apex class and an Apex method and then a validation rule, and all of these things are connected. And now I can create using Cline and Agentforce Vibes, I can provide to them to say, look, this is what I derived from your org. It may not be perfect, but at least it's a point of reference that now people can see, oh, I didn't know we were doing that step. I didn't know we were using those tools. Whatever it might be, I found that to be tremendously helpful, and it can help answer questions. It's now it takes anything it can read and turn it into a database. And now you can just ask questions about things and say, hey, what are we doing with this? And what are we doing with that? I would definitely recommend people add that aspect to their own personal productivity, which also brings in this basic understanding of kind of leveraging AI in a people-first capacity, which I think that's the next wave of AI. I think this first wave
Well,
is it's gonna crash badly in 2026. This
yeah.
idea of this one big boil the ocean public model, rather than this focused private AI pipeline that might use a hybrid or even an open source private AI pipeline that's quantized, which means it's kind of shrunken down. It may or may not even require a GPU. And it's focused on something specific, right? Whether that's a language or a subject matter like medical devices. We're going to see a lot more of this in the future. And so people becoming aware on how they can leverage that, provide it as a service to insulate the AI impact, the impact of the roller coaster that's going to be coming likely next year, because there's not enough private capital in the world to keep public AI alive right now.
Well, and not only that, but it introduces the one of the big reasons I've started moving towards security is governance of this is going to be huge,
It's
because
huge.
while utilizing AI expedites these kinds of reports, you just expose all your clients' data and metadata
You
to a
got it.
language,
That's true. Yeah.
to an LLM. And I mean, call me skeptical, but or paranoid, I guess. But Amazon always told us that Alexa wasn't saving audio data,
But on
and
upon
saving
subpoena,
audio data on miners,
yes,
actually.
yeah, upon subpoena, she
So
does.
trust the verify. And so I think security is going to be the next big wave after AI, is because of the amount of data, metadata that's exposed. I think we're going to see a lot of international organizations started up as competitors that are surprisingly similar to some other companies that are going to be operating in the world. And I personally think AI is going to be a part of that, or a part of the cause. It doesn't mean AI is bad, and it doesn't mean that now isn't a good time to come in Salesforce ecosystem just because it's difficult. It's kind of like when we had the transition from like the 70s and 80s, where you could just pick up your family, travel to another area of the country, and get a job the next week and just relocate. It's not a big deal. Those times are way long gone. In order to find a job and make something like that happen, you have to be more prepared nowadays. But it doesn't mean that you couldn't still do that if you planned right. Same thing goes here. Salesforce in particular is still a good product. I don't think the product is going anywhere itself. And so if you're wanting to get in the Salesforce space, I'm not here to tell you not to do it, but I wouldn't sell your house, move across the country, and do all these things until you have that secured. Don't give up that job that you currently have until you have something to replace it with, because said previously are not in your favor to be able to do that and to find success. You can still find success, but it may take a little bit longer than the timing that you give yourself. And I think with the way the ecosystem right now is at for entry level, it's one of those things where I wouldn't give up what you have now to just dive in head first. I know some people that I've met in my journey that are veterans that are trying to break in, but trying to break in for a year and a half, and they're still working their other job because they just haven't gotten that break. Once you get that first role, you're set. But it's getting that first role right now that's going to be the hardest. And that's always been a very difficult competitive area for certified professionals that don't have that hands-on experience. So that's why it takes companies like mine, like Stell, that are willing to take the risk on these veterans and give them that opportunity.
I love it. Well, I think that's a great place to wind up today. And certainly, please reach out to Andrew or myself if you find yourself or know somebody who's in that position looking for experience. And we are absolutely happy to support that. You can go to our socials and reach out that way. This has been such a pleasure. Thank you for your investment, not only in our country, but in the veteran community as you continue. And I mean, anybody who, I don't know if you heard of the story from DEF CON this year, but AI exploits were front and center because of it was the the threat vector is just exciting for those who really want to steal. And I think what you're doing is great. We need to get a lot better at AI governance, at AI security, and really recognizing the vulnerability we're putting out there for the sake of some convenience. So good stuff. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. It's a pleasure, and we look forward to hearing more as your story develops.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials. If you found this episode valuable, we would love your help reaching others. Please subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, and share this with another who would benefit.